Accession number 13357, Arthur Bailey, Reel 4.
Mr. A. Bailey, Reel 4. Did you train your own battalion fitters and drivers, Mr. Bailey?
Most of them were fitters when they came to us, or they'd had mechanical experience being in the motor trade.
In civilian life?
Yeah.
Did you find there were plenty of those men to do the, or to fill the jobs that you had?
Yes, but there was two lads came from there. I think it'd be the Ordnance Corps then that had been trained, and they were attached to us for then on. One was made a sergeant, and he's with us still with his bandit, Paddy Campbell. And the rest were just the local lads that had been brought into there, being drivers and what have you. And there was a certain amount of training, you know, but we had mostly experienced men.
Did you find that there were good quality men?
Good workers, yeah, conscientious. No bother at all with them that way.
You were at UFCM, you'd just been moved to UFCM. What were you doing there?
Well, we were getting ready, I think, to go abroad again, and we're sorting everything out and packing everything up and just reorganising in a way.
Were you getting new stuff in, new equipment?
Yes, and all the old stores and everything, you know, in that line.
Did you have any notion as to where you were going?
None. Yes, we did in a way, with some of the clothing we got. You know, the khaki drill. That was the only thing. Nothing was said or anything.
What were your own personal feelings about serving abroad at this time?
Well, it didn't really bother us, really. You know, as long as we were with the same lads and the same unit, that's all that mattered. We were all, like, more or less all mates and friends going together.
Had you been given leave, embarkation leave?
I think we had. Had a week or so leave. I'm not quite sure, no.
How did your family take the news that you may be going abroad?
Just accepted it, weren't they? Just accepted it.
They were not too upset?
No, they just accepted it.
What are your memories of actually leaving UFCM and going?
I remember getting on the boat in Gorrock, and because there was some of the lads deserted. They were Scotch lads, just forget the name now, and they brought them in with a motorboat and put them in the net and pulled them up the side, you know, and all the lads were cheering. Then they put in the military police had them on board the boat. And one of the lads is dead now, Frank Anley, that was in the transport with us, well, he was in the band earlier with us. He said, I wonder when we'll come back. When we say no to Gorrock. I wonder if we'll ever get back, or something to that effect.
Did you have, what are your own feelings actually when you left England, or Scotland as it was, and you were sailing off?
Well, there was a certain amount of excitement about it, you know, going on a big liner. One of the liners we went to was big, they were big liners. And because there was a theatre on board, and everything, swimming pool, and everything, you know. It was something strange, new to us. Didn't realise how long we were going to be on. I think it was about 7 weeks.
What were your living quarters like on board the ship?
Well, when we first went on, we were in hammocks. And the first night, everybody's falling out of them, trying to get in them and that. Then after that, you just stepped anywhere you wanted. We stepped where the anchor was in the back, because the weather started to get very hot. That's where we stepped. You just stepped anywhere, really.
The NCOs didn't have separate accommodation from the men?
Not on there, no. You're just with your own men.
What was the food like on board the ship?
It was better than what we'd been used to. But then Pete was seasick. So there was plenty of it. It's quite good, really. It was better than what we'd been used to.
Were you training all the time you were on board?
Yes, you had jobs to do, just the same. I was, although I was out the band, we had an orchestra, and I spent a lot of time in the orchestra on board the ship for several years and that for concerts and whatever.
Were there a lot of men on board?
Yes, mostly from our units till we got to South Africa. When we got to South Africa, there's a lot more gone on board, different regiments from all over the world. And Air Force. But I don't think they went out on from England with the Air Force. And I think they were mostly the local regiment that went on board.
Your leisure activities, what form did they take on board the ship?
My time was mostly took up in the band, you know, the orchestra, what they had on board the boat. Just walking around and that, and, you know, amusing yourself. Whatever way you wanted.
Well, you said you were playing in the band. There was concerts on board.
Concerts, yeah.
And did you have dances or that kind of thing?
Yes, everything like that.
As most of you.
Was it really like a dance band what we had on board? You know.
As most of you would be men, I presume there weren't many women on board.
No, there wasn't any women that I knew of. I don't think there's any women at all on board there. Even, you know, among the crew or anything.
So in your dances, men danced with men?
I think they would, I can't remember, no. You know, I just took part. It was one of the, I forget what they call the ship now, Duncan. They had names for the ships, the sailors did, you know. And it was quite an experience.
What's your outstanding memories of the journey?
Well, when we got to Durban, there's quite a few sick, but they wanted to be off because they got, I think, like shore leave for a day or two, and the people came with cars, and mostly people that had moved down to South Africa from this part of the country. A lot of people from Concert and that had worked on the railways out there. He came with cars and picked them up and took them home, took your home to their homes and whatever.
And did this happen to you?
Yes, oh yeah.
Do you recall who it was and where you went?
I can remember it happening, but I can't recall, you know, how it was and that. I remember them all waiting with cars at the dockside. And just got in, went with whatever group you went with.
What happened after that? Where did you go after that?
We were only there a few days. It was while they railroaded with food and that and whatever the ship needed. We went up the Suez Canal. The bus way through the Red Sea, up in the Suez Canal, away past in.
What was that like?
It's quite an experience, you know. It was all new, you know.
Were there any particular incidents that happened on the ship?
Yeah, there's on the convoy these planes what they used to catapult off in the escort. Remember one going up and he didn't get up very well and he went down into the sea because it was lost. They dropped some boats, you know, I tried there, but they just had a service on board for them. Could hear it because they were all sailing very close together, the ships. Where I was standing, I could see the men in the plane, you know, as it went down the water. could see them as plain as anything with that near.
Did all of the ships have a service for these men that were killed?
Well, I can't remember. We could hear the service on board the ship that they were off, you know. Like escort ship, they've been naval ships, really.
It was a very long journey. How did the men get through it? Was there any problems with boredom?
Well, I used to raid a lot, you know, lion raid. Although there wasn't much to say apart from the convoy that you're sailing with, every day just went by. You know, you wouldn't know what the next day would bring.
Do you recall the date that you left England?
Not the date, but I remember the sort of day. It was a nasty, very nasty day. It was a nasty day when we came back, and all used to see him in the Gorak. Raining and damp and dreary.
When you got to your destination, where did the ship stop when you got off?
The bottom end of the Suez Canal, I think, was it Port Suez, which is the bottom half, you know. And then we had like a march for a few miles, and it was red hot, I'll remember. Everybody kept going filling their bottles with water because the heat was, you know, really hot.
And what was your first impressions of Egypt, other than the heat, of course? The countryside, the people, did you see many of them?
Not really, not there. And then we came in contact with them, and I think it was when we first went to was in tents. Naturally it was all tented. It's Ismailia, I believe it's called Ismailia, on the Suez Canal.
What were you doing there?
Just organising again for transport. I was busy every day with, you know, it was all organising.
Was this transport that was waiting for you? You hadn't brought it with you?
We didn't have a lot of transport. I don't think we had a lot of transport immediately. Then I think we made up with transport, because I think we went to Cyprus from there. We went down to Cyprus with a few trucks, just a few of us, and when we got down the Suez Canal, or whether it was Port Said or Port Jofik, I don't know, and I was in charge, just a few of us, and went to see the officer that was on the docks. He said, "That's your ship." It was just a small little coaster. And we said, "Oh, we're going to get the transport on board." Well, they said, "You've got to get it on yourselves. You get a barge, you've got to load them yourselves." And this boat that we were going to sail with had been a coaster. I think it had been a flower ship or so, or maybe it was a coal ship, I don't know. Just a little thing, and we had to work the winches and everything ourselves. When they turned the steam on, it was coming out all over the place. And the first one, when we got it up, it went down, hit the barge again. Just a little barge, just held one truck. But anyhow, we got there, and we complained because there was no toilets and that. So they made some toilets and just put them on the deck. On the deck, we asked about life belts, and the officer said, we'll get you a little raft or something like that. And they made them there, the pipeline, with the military that made them. And when we sailed, we were anxious to know where we were going to go to. And I think, if I remember right, the lad that was in officer on the captain of this, well, I don't know how many crew there'd be on, but there was just a handful, Indians and that. And all he could say was, "I don't know myself until I've sailed to a certain spot. Then I open orders." When he opened the order, Cyprus, where we didn't know where Cyprus was. But he seemed very relieved, because he thought we were going into Tobruk. And Tobruk was cut off at that time, and a little boat chose to sneak in on a night. And there wasn't many of them got in. He must have thought, well, bit of thing going to Cyprus. And there was one of the crew belonged to Sunderland. And he was to join it, and I don't know why they joined it, because he never did anything, and all he did was sit in the deck chair. And we were concerned about, you know, not travelling in convoy, and no escort. And all he could say was, "You're as safe as houses, you're as safe as houses. If the German submarine comes up, they won't bother us. They just pull off and go away." And we'd been sailing very long, we're out in the Med, after they'd opened the orders and the engine broke down. And we had to repair it ourselves with these Indian fellas. And it was red hot. And there was a little small gully, and it was just ordinary coal-fired gully. And when we got there, I think it was Farm Augusta. We had a terrible job to get the trucks off, because the boat had made over the wrong way, and we couldn't get the dirty to pull over. We were just pulling the rope. And we took some mailbags with us. Been put on board, and it was the Christmas meal for the man that was there, but it was already a year late. I think it was the Sherwood Foresters that were there, and they were like living in caves, like, because it was colder.
Had you sailed separate from the rest of the battalion?
Yes, we were on our own. We went first.
And how many trucks did you have on the ship?
About five. Just very small. Just a little coaster. They were on the deck. They had them on deck. The deck was red hot. You know, in the middle of the Med. At that time of the year.
It's incredible, because the battalion came over in very, very fast ships.
When
they came. And you were in this slow-moving...
Yeah, that's right. We went before they came, we were there. Actually, we hadn't been very long on the Suez Canal when we went away from Cyprus.
The transport you'd taken over, was this old British Army stock, or had it come from elsewhere?
No, I think it's some we took out the Middle East with us. I can't remember a lot about taking what transport we took, but it was old transport, it was English transport that we took.
What was your first impressions of Cyprus?
Well, I like Cyprus. It was a nice country. But, I mean, Cyprus, what it is now to then, it was very antique in a way. You know, the old water pumps for the donkeys and what have you. And that. The people were very poor. More like the peasant type of people. But then the weather was lovely. There's plenty of fruit. What I mean, our food wasn't very good. I think we got bread one meal a week, if I can remember right. And goat meat. Yeah, we didn't get much. Well, there wasn't many boats called in then at the island. There was no airfield or anything like that.
Do you recall what date you arrived there?
Not really, no. I remember being bad in the back of a truck, and I was there for a couple of days on the road, because nobody bothered them with Jip or Tommy.
What were you doing on the island?
Just in case the Germans invaded.
And your job, what specifically
just,
was that?
Just the same with the transport.
Keeping it moving.
Keeping it moving, and, you know, keeping a check of everything and that.
Had you the same transport officer as you'd had in England?
It was Lockhart that we had. I'll tell you for why. Because he was Captain Lockhart. He was one of these men where if we got water, we drank as much as we wanted, as much as we could be. Same as he regulated himself. And I often wonder why, because I think he escaped, didn't he, in the desert, Lockhart, and walked it. which was suicide, really. Because when he landed there, you know, his feet was all swollen and that. He'd been took prisoner, as far as I know. I think there was a film made about him or something at the time. Because he didn't have good feet, he had fat feet. You know, I used to get to know them, we'd been with them, you know, a lot of the officers.
What was he like as an officer?
He was good. I liked the look on.
Do you have any other memories of Cyprus?
Yes, that young lad, Jimmy Clark, that they came into transport, he's still a friend of mine, I still keep phoning him up. What a thing for making tea, you know, for like our own lads and that, on two primer stoves. And I'd been away collecting some stuff with the nephew one day for them in Nicosia. And when I came back, all the place was burned down. And Jimmy, what he'd done, he'd opened the valve on one primer stove, had them both on like on a stand. The fumes had lit off the other one and burnt them. He's badly burnt, you know. I remember him being in hospital and that. And the marks on him, but he did a good job on his arms and legs and whatever, yeah. Well, you know, well, he could be seen, you know, then with having the kid, a khaki drill on, and his face, he did a good job on him. He's in hospital for quite a while, down in Nicosia Hospital. When I used to go down, the sister used to say, don't bring a mirror in for him. Don't bring any mirrors in. So it's the same. So he used to say to me, have you got a mirror, Alf? No, I haven't got a one, Jim. Well, you try and get a one, let's see, you know. She used to say, don't bring a one.
Did he come out back to the battalion?
Yeah, he was with us, yeah. He was with us right till the end.
What kind of work was the transport doing on the island?
Well, the usual, bringing stores in and that for the companies and that, and going to the ordnance, wherever, RSA, where we collected the rations and that. Just the usual thing. We had dumps, storage dumps with food buried, and we used to transport it, you know, in case there was anything happened.
Did you get on well with the native population?
We didn't bother them a lot. Not really. They were friendly. You know, they used to show that you when they're going along with the sheep and the goats and Kalaspera and this sort of thing, good morning, good night. That was the only thing. There was one or two youngsters who used to run around, you know, and do odd jobs and that, just for what they could pick up food-wise and that.
Did they seem to resent the British on the island?
No, they didn't. No, not at all. At least I didn't think so.
Did you get any experience of meeting the Turkish Cypriots and the Greek Cypriots?
They seemed to live together then, peacefully. In the same village, you had Greeks and Turks living, because when this trouble was on, I couldn't believe it. Well, the trouble we had just a few years ago with the fighting each other, couldn't believe it, because the just seemed to live happily. Maybe they didn't, but they told us it appeared they did.
What were you living in yourselves?
Tents.
And was it quite warm and pleasant?
Well, tents. Yeah.
Did you get any leisure time? Did you go anywhere for leisure? Enjoyment?
Yes, there used to be. I think there was Don Nicosia when we were up there. There was a. Yeah. Like some roller skating. You used to go down there, mix with the local young people then.
And there wasn't much trouble between the troops and
no,
the civilians?
No, there was no trouble. There was no trouble. And then the sea was always that nice to bathe in when we were at Farm Augusta. We used to go down, spend most of our time in the sea. Because anybody could swim because it was that buoyant with the salty water. Man, it was very hot there. At that time of the year when we were there, very warm.
Do you recall exactly where you were positioned on the island?
Not really. We didn't seem to stay very long. We seemed to move. We were outside of Nicosia for quite a while when we did get stabilized. But until then, we were at a few places on the island. I mean, it didn't really matter where you were. We were with the same lads and the same... Could have been anywhere in the world. It didn't make much difference to you.
Did you have plenty of fuel for the lorries and vehicles?
Yes.
You could keep them moving.
I can't remember which about. Oh, we picked it up. We used to have supply points. I can't really remember in Cyprus where we picked it up. You know, these certain things that you forget about. I mean, obviously, we must have been picked up supply points because there was no petrol pumps, anything like that. It was all out of can. What they used to call flimsies.
And how efficient were those?
They used to leak and everything. They were just like very thin sheet with a cardboard cover around. 2 4-gallon tins in. They used to, I can't understand how there was no more accident. You know, with the fumes and that. Especially out there in the Middle East. But they just used to throw them and that.
You said that the army food wasn't too good in Cyprus.
Well, no, well, they didn't have the rations. I know we didn't get a lot of bread because there wasn't the bread there. And meat was scarce because they didn't have the meat. I think it was mostly goat meat we got. And bully beef and the usual thing what they did, stew and that. But the weather, there was that much fruit and that, so he didn't do badly in that respect. Because the fruit used to grow wild, the grapes and that, and olives and what, you know, used to grow on the roadside.
How much were you being paid at this time, do you recall?
Not a lot, just a few shilling a day, I think.
And that was sufficient for your needs?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't drink and that, so... They did used to get ration, you know, beer ration and that, but I'm non-smoker, so that's a big help.
So did you bargain your beer ration and smoking ration for other things?
I remember later on when we were up in the desert, I got that sick of the different ones saying, can I have your cigarettes, can I have your beer? I just used to throw them out. Let them scramble for them. Yeah. Different ones used to say, I'll have your cigarette ration now.
And you were a full sergeant at this time?
Yeah. I was always full sergeant. I was never lance sergeant. When I passed that course that I told you about, I was a full sergeant automatic.
How long were you on Cyprus?
I can't remember exactly, but I'll tell you what happened. Cyprus. They came and they just took everybody off the island. And left just a few of us on. Now the Germans were on Crete. Sometimes they have nightmares about it now. And they could have come and landed any time they wanted. And there was just a few of us left on the island. And I was left. And the brigade major, I think it was Black. Well, we knew him from years before. Used to say, you've got to be here at a certain time every day. Don't go away from, you know. And he used to come round, and he just come one day and said, right, leave everything, get in here and off. And we were off, we got on a French mine layer or something. We just, a couple of hours, we were over into Palestine.
Did you take your trucks with you this time?
No, took nothing. Just left everything where it was. Just took our own kid bags and that. We just got in the way. I think it was getting dusk, going on this. pouring this, because the troops had all gone weeks before. And they just put us on, and we're away a couple of hours. Because I'll never forget how long it took us to go, days, and how long it took us to come back. Because it wasn't Egypt, like I think it was into Palestine.
So you were the rear guard?
Yeah, we've just left. Aye. We've just left. There's nobody came to take over anything. We just left everything.
Do you recall what time of the year this was?
Not really. No, I know that it was warm. It was nice. It was a nice time of the year.